listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Around our area continues now in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Your reader for this hour is Sally Herzhaus. And we go to our first paper, the East Aurora Bee, and this is the Thursday, October 16th, 2025 edition. Our first article, Town of Aurora to hold Final Comprehensive Plan Workshop on October 22nd. Final plan will guide future town decisions. The Town of Aurora Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee will host the second and final public workshop for the town's comprehensive plan update from 5:30 until 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, October 22nd at the East Aurora High School, 1003 Center Street. A comprehensive plan serves as a long-term blueprint for a community's future, detailing priorities for land use, housing infrastructure, transportation, neighborhood revitalization, farmland preservation, and environmental resiliency. Aurora's updated plan aims to guide growth and preservation efforts across the town in the years ahead. The workshop will be held in the open house format, featuring display boards that outline the plan's recommended actions and a future land use map. The recommended actions identify steps the town and its partners will take to achieve the plan's long-term vision, while the land use map serves as a policy guide for future zoning updates. Members of the consultant team, steering committee, and town officials will be present to answer questions. There will be no formal presentation, and residents are invited to stop by any time during the two-hour session. The Town of Aurora Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee consists of Raymond Raisin, Town Councilman Chair, Charles Snyder, Town Supervisor, Dan Castle, Commissioner, Erie County Department of Environment and Planning, Nancy Burkhardt, Member of the Town Zoning Board of Appeals, Angela Griffs, Member of the Town Planning Board, Dale Morris, a Member of the Town Open Space Committee, and Sue Russell, member of the Town Climate Smart Community Task Force, and Bob Morgan, independent business owner. For more information about the Town of Aurora Comprehensive Plan, visit the committee's website at www.townofauroracompplansquarespace.com. Or reach out to the steering committee's chairman and town councilman, Raymond Raisin, at rwrazen@townofaurora.com. For those who weren't able to attend in person, all workshop materials will be available afterward on the project website at townofauroracompplan.com. Aurora Players unveiled new seats, renovations made possible by the Scott Byler Family Foundation. East Aurora nonprofit theater group Aurora Players, one of Western New York's oldest community theater organizations, recently unveiled their newly renovated auditorium inside the historic Roycroft Pavilion in Hamlin Park. The project was made possible through the generosity of the Scott Byler Family Foundation, along with contributions from community members and countless volunteer hours. The pavilion's auditorium now feature brand new seating for the first time in more than 90 years, offering improved comfort and accessibility for audiences while preserving Aurora Players' tradition of presenting high-quality live theater in East Aurora at affordable prices. The event drew community members, local leaders, and theater supporters who gathered to celebrate this milestone. At a recent ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate the improvements, guests were invited to tour the upgraded space, test drive the new seats, and enjoy a brief musical program performed by alumni cast members as well as cast from the Bridges of Madison County musical, which opened on October 10th. During the ceremony, Scott Beiler, president of the Scott Beiler Family Foundation, reflected on the project's impact, noting the large project was a surprise and stemmed from Aurora Player's previous smaller request for assistance funding puppetry material for a past performance. During his speech, Beiler, the CEO of West Her Automotive and a resident of West Falls, recalled encouraging the nonprofit theater group to present a larger project for him to fund, to make a difference for performances to come. "The arts are an essential part of a thriving community," Beiler said. "We are proud to support Aurora Players and the historic Roycroft Pavilion so that generations to come can enjoy meaningful cultural experiences right here in East Aurora." Timothy Musio, president of the Aurora Players Board of Directors, also emphasized the importance of the renovations. "This is more than a renovation. It's a promise to future generations," Musio said. "For decades, the pavilion has been a place where audiences gather to experience the joy of live theater. Thanks to this generous gift, that tradition will continue with greater comfort and accessibility than ever before." Head of Aurora Players Marketing Committee, Laura Orovec, said the new seats match the high-quality performances brought to life by the players, seasoned actors, and singers, many of whom have full-time jobs in addition to their roles in the East Aurora Players production. "Aurora Players have already started welcoming guests to enjoy the new auditorium for their current production, The Bridges of Madison County, based on the best-selling novel and popular film adaption currently running through October 26th. Tickets are available at www.auroraplayers.org or by calling the box office at 716-687-6727. "They fought for her. She walked for them. Local nurse helps female veterans, CTC." This is by Rachel Ross. Every step Linda Transky took on her 100-mile walk from Syracuse to East Aurora last August carried the memory of the nurses who once held her grandfather's hand during his time serving in the United States military, and the women veterans whose service too often goes unrecognized. Transky, a registered nurse, walked to raise awareness and funding for the very first all-female veteran Buffalo Niagara Honor Flight, which took place last weekend. Transky had the opportunity to join the veterans on their flight and see the impact of her 100-mile walk. Since 2016, nonprofit Buffalo Niagara Honor Flight has flown over 900 veterans to Washington, D.C. on an overnight, all-expense-paid trip to view monuments built in their honor. According to their website, their mission is to promote a nation where all of America's veterans experience the honor, the gratitude, and community support they deserve. Transky initially got involved with Honor Flight through her grandfather, a World War II veteran, who participated in the program over a decade ago. Since then, Transky and her family have remained regular volunteers for the organization. Upon hearing that the group was to host the first all-female flight out of Buffalo, Transky knew she wanted to do something special to support the trip. "I had done a walk in 2021 for a different organization, so I thought I would do another walk to support the flight," Transky said. "I started in Syracuse and walked back to East Aurora and tried to meet different people, stop at different veterans' posts along the way, and just try to bring some attention to it." According to Transky, the walk raised approximately $10,000 in donations. The two-day trip, which has since returned home, included a full flight with 35 female veterans. The flight's all-female rule even applied to the flight crew. The program requires that all veterans be accompanied by a guardian, which can be either a family member or a friend or a trained volunteer. Anyone accompanying a veteran must pay their own way. Transky said she was thrilled when she heard that the organization was organizing an all-female flight, and she believes it brings honor and respect to a group that is often underrepresented for their military contributions. So many nurses during World War II, they just didn't think that they served our country, Transky said. I had read different stories and memoirs from different conflicts in different decades, and the nurses just didn't value themselves as really anyone who served in our military. And that just aggravated me. They deserve to be honored so much, just as much as those men who are protecting our country. Transky said that her grandfather, who was injured several times throughout the service, often spoke about the nurses' impact on both his physical and mental well-being. He said he remembered opening his eyes, and the first person that he saw in the hospital was a nurse who just grabbed his hand and said to him, "You're going to be okay." Those were his only moments of really remembering when he woke up. That was the level of injury. He could remember the pain and where he was, but he remembers that nurse voice, Transky said. As a nurse herself, Transky is proud to be able to honor the legacy of the women who participated in the flight. It's impressive, these women's histories and what they did, and then went on to raise families. It's just amazing to me, Transky said. I've been a nurse for almost 20 years, and some of my patients have been veterans. They do remember the nurses in the military that helped them and speak so fondly of them, so that's why it's important to me. More information about applying for future flights or getting involved with Honor Flight can be found on their website at BuffaloNiagaraHonorFlight.org. Erie County Republican legislatures back Langworthy's Energy Choice Act. This is by Justin Sullivan. Erie County Republican legislatures are standing in opposition to what they call overly aggressive and dangerous energy proposals put forth by some Democratic Albany lawmakers. Legislators Lindsay Larico, John Mills, Chris Green, Frank Todaro recently submitted a resolution in support of the Congressman Nick Langworthy's Energy Choice Act, which would safeguard households, small businesses, hospitals, farmers, and manufacturers from government overreach and allow them to continue access to multiple energy forms, including natural gas. Governor Hochul and Democrats in Albany have waged an extensive crusade against natural gas that sent home energy costs through the roof, crippled our energy supply, and left New York teetering on the edge of an energy crisis, all to satisfy the radical fantasies of the far-left climate cult. New York has been ground zero for the Green New Deal, where common sense goes to die and working families get stuck with the bill, said Congressman Langworthy. New York State enacted the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act in 2019, which aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions of 40% by 2030 and 85% by 2050 from 1990 levels, which Democrats say will put New York on the path toward carbon neutrality while ensuring equality, system reliability, and a just transition from fossil fuel economy to a robust clean energy economy. The CLCPA aims to transform New York production's energy heats building and powers. Let's go back. The CLCPA aims to transform how New York produces energy, heats buildings, and powers transportation, including transitioning to zero-emission vehicles. It seeks to reduce reliance on fossil fuels, keep energy spreading local, and promote public health and economic opportunity through clean energy initiatives. Governor Kathy Hochul and New York State Legislature enacted provisions in the 2023 state budget, banning natural gas and other fossil fuel hookups in most new residential and commercial buildings, effective 2026. For smaller buildings and in 2029 for larger buildings. I've been hearing many complaints about people's energy bills going up. This isn't the fault of the utility. It's the fault of Albany politicians trying to force a dangerous mandate on New York State residents. It's time Albany puts the safety and needs of residents first, said legislator Lindsay LaRico. In the resolution, Erie County Legislature Republicans are urging Congress to pass the Energy Choice Act, defending consumer choice, protecting energy affordability, and preserving reliable access to natural gas. More information on the state's CLCPA is available at climate.ny.gov. Before we go to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here we go to the Orchard Part B, and this is the Thursday, October 16th, 2025 edition. Go to our first article, Orchard Park Teacher Puts Her Filmmaking Dream in the Spotlight. This is by Joseph Glenard. With many films being made in Buffalo over the past few years, one of Orchard Park's teachers had been following her dream in the filmmaking world. Maria Braun, an English teacher from Orchard Park High School, has been teaching in Orchard Park since 2012 and has always had a love for performing. "I was a theater kid in high school," said Braun. "I knew no matter what I was going to be performing, I wanted to study it in college, but I also really wanted to be a teacher. So I made it my mission to accomplish both." 2 years into her teaching career, Braun began to observe local film productions to see the day-to-day process of making a film. Eventually, she worked her way into having a small role in the film. "Getting involved in the community here was much more accessible than I had originally thought," said Braun. "Some days they needed a boom operator. Some days they needed an acting coach. And before I knew it, they were asking me to play a small role. From there, I started partaking in film competitions." "And getting noticed, which is how I got a lot of my work since. After gaining some traction and getting involved in the Buffalo 48-hour film project in 2016, Braun's films began to get noticed internationally. This led her to founding the Pan American Film Division in 2020, which has gone on to win multiple awards, including Cannes Film Festival screenings and other international awards. Since stepping down from her leadership role with the production company, Braun still does independent contracting with them for some of her projects. With a busy schedule full of teaching and film shoots, Braun mentions how much of a community effort it truly is to make her dreams a reality. "When it comes to my teaching, I realize how lucky and blessed I am to have a position that gives me time to follow my dreams," said Braun. "I am only able to do this because of the support of my family, my amazing husband, who helps take care of our two baby girls, and my community around me that has helped push me along in my path." With the holiday season coming up, Braun has three new movies premiering, including two films that were filmed in the Buffalo area. Braun plays Susan in Hallmark Channel's Touchdown, A Bill's Love Story, and Anna and Great American Family Channels' There's No Place Like Christmas, which each premiere at 8 p.m. on November 22nd and November 30th, respectively. Working on those two films was amazing, said Braun. Buffalo is this hidden gem that is starting to grow as a hub for filmmakers. To see these big opportunities happening in our hometown is just wild. With Braun following her dreams in both filmmaking and teaching, she is hoping to provide inspiration for all of her students to follow their dreams too. Being able to live out my dream in front of my students while I'm actively educating is something that I hope they are able to look at and realize that they can accomplish anything they put their minds to, said Braun. If they want something badly enough, they can do it, no matter where they are. That is something I have lived by my whole life. To check out some of Braun's filmmaking career, you can visit her film Instagram page at Maria Braun, that's M-A-R-I-A-B-R-A-U-N, acting. Orchard Park Women's Club brings holiday joy to survivors of domestic violence. This is by Emma McGillicott. The Women's Club of Orchard Park held its annual membership tea on Wednesday, October 8th at St. John's Lutheran Church, bringing members together for fellowship and to support victims of domestic violence. As part of the event, the club welcomed guest speaker Kelly Gust, Community Outreach Manager at the Family Justice Center of Erie County. Guest spoke about the services offered by the Family Justice Center, which provides free, one-stop wraparound support for victims of domestic violence and their children. Services offered by FIC include crisis counseling, needs assessment, safety planning, case management, connection to legal services, short-term and transitional housing, support groups, and on-site child care. The center also offers pet therapy through a partnership with the SPCA. Programs include Totes of Love, Hope Shop, Pantry, Cooking for Clients, and Essential Needs. All client information remains confidential. There is so much hope and joy in this life-saving work, Gass said. It is a blessing for us to be able to connect the hearts of those who can give with the hearts of those in need and witness the transformation from victim to survivor. FJC began in Orchard Park and was organized and run by Mary Travers Murphy, a former television journalist and a 2005 Orchard Park Town Supervisor. Although the Orchard Park satellite location has since closed, the main office is now located at 438 Main Street in Buffalo. Additional sites are located in Amherst and Grand Island. In 2024, the Family Justice Center estimates it answered 6,000 calls for help and opened approximately 1,500 active cases. Since its founding in 2006, the center has helped more than 21,000 clients. The Women's Club collected an assortment of new items for donation to the FJC's Holiday Hope Shop, including bath and body products, toys, children's socks, and sleepwear. All items will be used to help women and children during the holiday season. I haven't visited yet, but I am told it is a beautiful boutique style shop where survivors are allowed to pick out things they need or that might bring them a bit of joy, said Terry Cinta, president of the Women's Club of Orchard Park. At Christmas time, they are able to choose a gift for themselves and items for their children. This brings a sense of normalcy to the holidays when they are able to put some gifts under the Christmas tree. Cinna noted that all items in the Holiday Hope shop must be new, as FJC does not accept used donations. Being able to choose things from the shop brings such happiness to the women, and they can't believe they do not have to pay for them, she said. The Women's Club also presented a check to the Family Justice Center in support of its work. According to Erie County Social Services, 4.5 million women report being abused every year in the United States. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women between the ages of 15 and 44, more common than car accidents, muggings, and cancer deaths combined. Founded in 1967, the Women's Club of Orchard Park has strived to promote good fellowship, civic betterment, and ethical, intellectual, and social standards. Each year, members select a topic to pursue and raise awareness. For the current club year, members are focusing on domestic violence and abuse, as well as how art enhances life. Charitable projects are very important to us, Shuda said. The presentation by Kelly Guest from FJC, as well as the collection of items for the Holiday Hope Shop, was certainly embraced by our members. The Women's Club also awards a $1,000 annual scholarship to a graduating Orchard Park female senior who will be continuing her education. The scholarship is funded by the club's annual fundraiser, which this year features a raffle for a full-size quilt handmade by award-winning Orchard Park quilter Virginia Davey. The drawing will be held at the club's Christmas party on Wednesday, December 10th at the Orchard Park Country Club. The club is currently welcoming new members who are interested in charitable work, lifelong leader learning, and community fellowship. One longtime member will celebrate her 99th birthday in November and will also be recognized for 25 years of membership at Wednesday's November 12th meeting. We hope and pray there will be a 100th celebration next year, Juno said. Kerbal Plastics wins 3 gold awards. Orchard Park-based Kerbal Plastics Incorporated, a supplier of high-performance plastic sheet, rod, tube, film, tape, and fabricated parts, was honored with the 3 gold awards and announced the appointment of its marketing director, Sherry Bloom, to the board of directors of the International Association of Plastic Distributors during the association's 69th annual convention in Chicago. Bloom, who has worked at Kerbal's Orchard Park headquarters for 12 years, oversees marketing and sales development initiatives that strengthen customer engagement and support the company's growth. She has volunteered with the IAPD on the Editorial Committee, Workforce Development Task Force, and as chair of the Marketing Committee. Kerbal was recognized with the Gold Education Circle of Champions Award for its employee learning and development programs and received the inaugural Education Impact Award for advancing industry knowledge through workforce training, customer education, and university partnerships. Ashley Riley, Senior Training and Development Manager at Kerbal, said the award reflects the company's focus on employee growth and industry education. The company also earned the Gold Environmental Excellence Award for the 11th consecutive year for its sustainability efforts and the Gold Marketing Excellence Award for campaigns promoting performance plastics and their role in innovation and sustainability. Jerry Hilbig, president of Kerbal Plastics, said the awards reflect the company's commitment to developing employees and supporting the performance plastics industry while highlighting Orchard Park's role as home to the company. The convention also marked the competition of 2 one-year terms as IAPD president by Peter Delgado, vice president of training and customer experience at Corbel. Delgado guided the association through strategic initiatives to the performance plastic sector. Jeffrey Burke, senior regional director at Corbel, also concluded his second two-year term on the IAPD board. Before we move to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And we move on to the West Seneca Bee. This is the Thursday, October 16th, 2025 edition. Our first article, School Board Hears Redistricting Recommendation. This is by Eric Kepler. Redistricting has become a dirty word over the past several years for the West Seneca School District as it attempts to deal with inequitable class sizes and declining student enrollment. Addressing the West Seneca School Board members last week, Superintendent Dr. Lisa Krueger instead called it an opportunity to steer the district on the right course over the long haul. This is a very comprehensive way in which we should be moving forward, Krueger told the trustees as she announced her recommendations. We look at this as an opportunity to have a long-range facilities plan that will not only respond to the concerns that we have around enrollment and capacity, but will also serve as long-term and well into the future. After years of studies, identified problems include too many students at Clinton Elementary, inadequate space for services at Ellendale, and teachers without classrooms at West Middle. Krueger ruled out building any additions to existing schools, since additions are not eligible for state aid, especially with West Seneca's overall enrollment declining. Instead, she said, they must use existing space in the district more wisely and avoid the Band-Aid approach of years past. Her strategy would account for enrollment changes and provide long-term plans for the Ebenezer Building, Winchester Academy, and the transportation facility. It would also adjust school enrollments, reduce expenses, and consolidate facilities. The school board has been looking at a number of options, but Krueger's recommendation calls for elementary-based redistricting, shifting some attendance zones from Clinton and Ellendale to Northwood and Winchester Potters. This recommendation would solve elementary class size concerns while maintaining current east-west boundaries. It would disrupt a relatively small number of students compared to other plans, and it can be implemented in the fall of 2026. Options not chosen included elementary-based redistricting and middle and high school repositioning, elementary-based redistricting on the west side and east side grade 5 repositioning, and elementary reconfiguration of pre-K to 2 and 3 to 5 schools. We can't stop here, though, Krueger said. This is just step one. Further recommendations included Ebenezer Building, clearing it out and selling it, as it is in need of $20 million in repairs over the next 5 years. It currently does not house students, so repairs would not be eligible for state aid. It houses some district offices and serves, which could be relocated to East Middle or Winchester Academy and save a significant maintenance cost. Winchester Academy, currently leased in its entirety to BOCES, providing $600,000 to the district, although that will end in 2027 when BOCES moves to a new site in Chickawaga. Ideally, the district would still lease approximately 6 classrooms to BOCES, so that it continues to generate income and also be student occupied and therefore eligible for state aid. It could also house central registration offices, social workers, the district's clothing closet, and possibly a Boys and Girls Club. Transportation facilities. They're currently in need of $10 million in repairs within the next 5 years. They're also landlocked and cannot be expanded to meet the demands of a growing bus fleet, thereby reducing the need for contracted out-of-town bus service. Move central district offices to one central location, likely the former East Elementary. These would include human resources, special education, business office, superintendent and district clerk, curriculum offices, technology offices, and board conference room. Athletic offices would be moved to one of the high schools. Future capital improvement projects, specifically repurpose the pools at East and West Middle Schools to increase instructional capacity. The district currently has pools in both middle and high school, and they'll need a combined $12.6 million in maintenance and repairs. Filling in the pools would allow for space to create specialized classes such as science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or visual and performing arts. The next step would be to allow for a public comment period through the end of October, ahead of an anticipated school board vote on November 18th. The district would also move toward vacating the Ebenezer building and selling the built property and finding a new site for the transportation facility. We should not approach this as a one and done, Kruger said. It should be a phased process that is going to serve as well long term. Upon the completion of Kruger's presentation, the board members had a number of questions and comments. My biggest concern is transportation, said Trustee Jeremy Maloney. We've had some issues with the contract group, and we still continue to have these issues. I feel it's going to cause a big headache once we get to the transportation part. Trustee Laureen Berlek echoed that sentiment, and Trustee Sarah Pawarik questioned the choice of repurposing the two middle school pools. Kruger noted that district research clearly showed that it didn't need four pools for the current enrollment, and that the space and money would be better spent elsewhere. I'd rather have two good pools than four mediocre pools for the same amount of money. Board of Education President Ed Bedient agreed. The transportation facility was also a big question mark, with the state's all-electric mandate looming. Kruger would not comment on any potential location for a new transportation center. Right now, we don't have the space to service more buses, she said. We're exploring opportunities and looking at properties that may be viable options. And we'll also need a solution for the current building. Is it worth utilizing by our district in any way? We have to make sure it's safe. Youth is served. West Seneca School Board welcomes student members. This is by Rachel Ross. High school is often regarded as a time when young adults begin to discover themselves and the impact they wish to make on the world around them. For West Seneca students Charlotte Stews and Carl Carlson, that impact includes contributing to the betterment of their schools by serving as an ex officio members of the West Seneca Central School District Board. In July of 2025, the New York State Education Department introduced legislation requiring that every state school district with a high school have at least one ex officio student member on their board. According to the New York State School Board Association, this law aims to recognize the value of including students' voices on school boards and thus empower students by giving them a voice in the decisions that affect their education and well-being and the operation of their schools. District Superintendent Dr. Lisa Krueger said that the board chose to create two ex officio positions, one for each area high school, in order to ensure the student body was represented in a holistic, comprehensive way. Additionally, the school board chose to elect two alternate ex officio members in the event Stoos or Carlson are unable to attend the meeting to guarantee the student perspective is always represented. Through their position, Stoos, a senior at West Seneca East, and Carlson, a junior at West Seneca West, have the opportunity to engage with administration on prevalent issues affecting the combined student body. I hear a lot of people complain and nobody does anything about it, Carlson said. Most students complain about decisions made by the board, but they don't know how those decisions are made. Krueger described the experience of having student representation on the board as refreshing and is grateful for the added insight their viewpoints provide for administration. Charlotte, Cal, and our alternate ex officio students, board members, give us a perspective that we wouldn't otherwise have. The perspective of the student body, Krueger said. They see things maybe from a different lens and perspective than the adults might see it from. And so I've already appreciated and enjoyed them being part of this. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. So far, in order to apply for the role, students are first required to fill out an application. From there, they were interviewed by their principal and asked to write an essay on why they were interested in the position, as well as gather letters of recommendation. With this unique opportunity to be intermediary between the district students and the administrators, Stoos and Carlson hope to foster stronger communication and understanding between both parties. We are the student advocates, so we have to make a bridge between the board and the students of the district, Stoos said. Anything that the students want that the board might not necessarily know about, we're supposed to be the person that relays the information both ways. Stoos and Carlson said that since starting in their positions, they have enjoyed forming a relationship with the board and have felt welcome and supported by the district. Cal and Charlotte are forging the path for the position, said School Board Vice President Maria Greenberg. It's really helpful to have the students' perspectives at the table because they are part of our conversation and they will really interject when they have something to add, which is very helpful. We're looking at things not just from the district perspective or administration's perspective or the board's perspective, but also the student's perspective in real time. In addition to serving on the board, Stoos is involved in a host of other leadership opportunities, including being senior class president. Carlson also participates in other leadership roles, as well as ski club outside of school. They are tremendous representatives of their school. They make us incredibly proud, Krueger said. They're great ambassadors of the student voice and really are great spokespersons for their schools. Before we move to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. and we move to the Sun, and this is the Friday, October 17th, 2023 edition. Our first article, Town of Hamburg Establishes Refuse and Recycling District. This is by Chris Graham. After years of conversations and meetings, the Town of Hamburg finally has a refuse and recycling district. Prior to the establishment of the district, which is approved by a 5-0 vote by the Hamburg Town Board, the Refuse and Recycling Committee held a public information meeting on the district. The meeting, led by longtime advocate Bob Mahoney, had a packed crowd in the basement meeting room of the Hamburg Town Hall. The creation of the district now allows for a 3-year deal with Modern Disposal to handle garbage, recycling, and bulk waste pickup in the town. There is the option to extend the contract for an additional 3 years. The service excludes the Village of Hamburg, the Village of Blaisdell, commercial businesses, and apartment complexes. Because in the past, the town did not have a contract with one provider, residents were left to decide if they wanted to collect the collection, and if they did, work out their own deal with one of the two providers in town, Waste Management or Modern Disposal. This led to neighbors in the town having widely different bills for collection. Mahoney himself said his refuse collection bill went from $99.03 in 2022 to $111 in 2023. He said that he spoke with his refuse provider after the increase and was able to negotiate a better deal. He said he talked to residents that had been paying as much as $800 per year, with others paying $400 per year. Now that will be a thing of the past. The contracted rate will be $239.91 per year for each housing unit. The contract does include a 3.5% cap for cost of living. Mahoney said the goal was to keep the cost per household unit under $300, making it more affordable than neighboring towns' programs. The savings was astronomical, Mahoney said. The agreement includes weekly garbage pickup, recycling pickup every other week, and bi-monthly bulk item pickup. Modern Disposal will supply large totes, believed to be over 90 gallons, for the refuse and recycling pickup. If you would like a second tote for recycling, a homeowner can contact Modern Disposal. Mahoney said the recycling pickup every other week is the topic he's fielded the most questions on. The people that are already at Modern are receiving recycling every week, but in this agreement, we have recycling every other week because it was cost-effective to do that, Mahoney said. It's a large saving by doing it every other week. While the details between the town and Modern Disposal are still being worked out, it's believed the service will begin on Tuesday, April 1st. Customers who already have Modern Disposal as their collection service will have a prorated bill until the town service begins in the spring of 2026. Mahoney said they are suggesting residents contact Modern Disposal in January to set up the service if they don't have it already. Once Modern Disposal takes over, they will handle concerns, questions, and complaints. Those who have Waste Management can just call the company to cancel service. Residents can opt out of the service, but it will still be included on the individual's tax bill. Mahoney used the example of 18 Mile Creek Golf Course and Hamburg Town Beach as services every town resident pays for, whether they use them or not. After hearing residents' concerns about refuse and recycling for so many years, Mahoney is thrilled the district is finally a reality. I'm elated, Mahoney said. Collins submits signed petitions in an attempt to take Hamburg Senior Community Center bonding to referendum vote. This is by Chris Graham. 709 signatures. That's how many signed petitions Josh Collins a write-in candidate for town supervisor submitted to the town clerk's office in an attempt to get the bonding for a new Hamburg Senior Community Center to get to a referendum vote for the voters to decide if the town should borrow $9,034,700 to construct the new center. Some of the people who signed it said, "I want a senior center, but I also want to be able to vote on it," Collins said. Collins' petition drive began after Hamburg Town Board passed by a 4-1 margin a bond resolution of over $9 million for the construction of the new center at 2982 Lakeview Road on town-owned land. The resolution, which was passed on September 8th, was open to a 30-day period where signatures could be acquired to take the matter to a referendum vote. Additionally, on September 8th, the board passed bond resolutions related to the parking areas adjacent to the center for a total of $513 and for the construction of pickleball courts for a total of $132,000. The town also approved several contracts for the project. A general construction contract of $6,352,000 was awarded to Restarterist Construction. An electrical construction company was awarded electrical construction contract was awarded to CIR Electrical Construction for $1,136,100, and HVAC mechanical contract was awarded to Greater Niagara Mechanical for $1,413,600. And the plumbing contract was awarded to William T. Spader for $778,000. Collins needed to gain 1,346 signatures, adding that he wanted to have more than what was needed for expected challenges. The 1,709 signatures are now in the hands of the Erie County Board of Elections. They will verify the petitions. For an individual to be verified, they have to be a registered Town of Hamburg voter, according to the ECBOE officials. It was stated at the town board meeting on October 6th, where 14 speakers spoke on behalf of the community center project, as it is, and the need to not have a referendum vote, that they were individuals who signed the petition that wanted their names removed. For individuals to have their names removed, they have to send in a written statement to the town clerk's office. Since beginning the petition drive, Collins has stated repeatedly that he just wants every voter in the town to have a say on the project due to the cost and scale. Collins said if the petition signed signatures, 50% were seniors. While Collins has wanted every voter to have their say, some of the senior community are not in favor of the petition drive, which they believe will delay or potentially kill the project entirely. As Collins submitted his petitions on October 7th in the town clerk's office, a group of around 15 seniors confronted him to express their disappointment in the drive, stating that the time for talk of a referendum vote on the center was 2 years ago, when the planning for the facility was just getting underway, and costs had not yet been put into an architect and consultant. "This is just part of the process," Collins told the crowd. "This is a legacy project, and it's going to cost a lot of money." Councilmember Frank Bogolski, who was the lone vote against the center bonding due to having questions about the general contractor's work on the West Seneca Senior Center, and also believing that different timing could allow the town to get a better deal on contracts due to the ongoing stadium construction, said that Collins submitted his petition was a wonderful day for democracy. "The voters can decide whether they want a community center," Bogolski said. Dave Rust, a member of the committee that looked into a new center, asked why this referendum push was not brought up 2 years ago. Where were you 2.5 years ago when that referendum should have come up?" Rust asked. "Now, we've spent how many thousands of dollars on architects engineers, renderings, and plans. Francine Geyer, another community member, said they plan to challenge the petition with a full audit of every signature at Collins gained. Seniors are questioned where the current center would go if this referendum to not borrow the money is successful. As of June 30th, the Youth Recreation and Senior Service Department and its programming moved from its old center at 4540 Southwestern Boulevard as the Frontier Central School District took back control of the building that the town had been leasing due to a clause in the lease. Subjected it to a 10-year review by the New York State Education Department to see if Frontier had an educational need for the building to SUNY Erie South Building 4. The lease with SUNY Erie South runs through December of 2026, which was supposed to coincide with the opening of the new 21,000 square foot center on Lakeview Road. Collins, at past town board meetings and on social media, has called for the center to be at McKinley Mall, saying it would be suitable, fiscally responsible, and make use of the existing space. We've had a committee to research properties, leasing options, buying options, land options, for over 2.5 years, said Councilman Daniel Kozub. We've looked at a number of sites, we've had public hearings on issues, and we've come to the conclusion, after all these sites, that the best value for the town of Hamburg was to put it on the Nike site. If the signatures are verified, the referendum would then be placed on the ballot for a special election. It's unknown when the special election will be held or how much it would cost the town. Amy Blundell, another supporter of the current center project, said the referendum vote would affect the timeline the town has created to have the new center built by the time the lease of the SUNY Erie South expires. Your plan is costing time, and we can't get it back, Blundell said. As of press time, the ECBOE has not delivered a report to the town on the status of the petition signatures and whether a referendum vote will be triggered. You've been listening to Around Our Area, a weekly look at community newspapers from around Western New York. Your reader for this hour has been Sally Herzog. Thank you so much for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Ampole Eagle. At 4 o'clock, we have the Grand Island Niagara County Tribune Sentinel. And following that, at 5 o'clock, we have the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. Looking for a fun and lively way to support your Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service? Join us on Friday, November 7th, for our second annual meat raffle at the Main Transit Fire Hall in Williamsville. Doors will open at 6 p.m. The first bin will be at 7 p.m. And tickets are only $10 pre-sale and for veterans. $15 at the door or a discounted $100 for a table of 12. Your admission includes two beers, refillable soft drinks, an American flag to wave on Veterans Day, and the chance to win from a huge selection of prime meat cuts and dozens of raffle prizes. Need tickets, a list of prizes, or more information? Visit your radio reading website at www.nfradioreading.org or call us at 716-821-5555. Thank you. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have